Hi again, everyone. This is Mark Movsesian, and I'm the co-director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's. And I'm joined once again by my good friend and colleague, Mark DiGirolami, who's the other co-director of the center, for an episode of Legal Spirits, our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on our website, lawandreligionforum.org, and also on Apple iTunes and also on Android, and coming soon to other platforms as well. Well, today, Mark, we're going to go back to a subject that we addressed in an episode a few years ago, back in 2019. It's striking to me how long we're doing this. An issue that we addressed earlier, namely religious exemptions to compulsory vaccination laws. Now, back then, in 2019, New York City was experiencing a measles outbreak, and the city had stepped up enforcement of vaccine requirements for school kids. And we addressed whether parents could claim religious exemptions to that vaccine requirement. Well, in 2019, none of us could imagine what was ahead and how this issue would come up again soon in an even more controversial and urgent situation involving not only New York, but the United States and the entire world. So we're going to turn back to that topic now because the issue of religious exemptions to compulsory vaccinations has come up, of course, in the COVID epidemic, in connection with some high-profile litigation here in New York. Now, the litigation concerns New York State's mandate that hospital workers receive COVID vaccines. There have been several court challenges to the mandate. Two of them are working their way through federal courts. One is in the Northern District in Utica. The other is in the Eastern District, and that one has already made its way to the Second Circuit. That case is called We the Patriots versus Hochul.
Great, Mark. Well, and we should note just a couple of other things. There's a different challenge to a New York City vaccine mandate for city workers that actually recently just made it to the Supreme Court, and Justice Sotomayor turned the plaintiff's request for an injunction against the mandate down while that litigation proceeds. So that was up on before the Supreme Court on preliminary injunction. That was declined. That case doesn't raise a claim for a religious exemption. We're not going to talk about that one. There's another we should also mention. There are students at our own university, at St. John's University, that have filed the lawsuit against the university on the basis that its compulsory vaccination requirement is a violation of their religious convictions or imposes a burden on their religious convictions. I'm actually not quite sure myself what the basis for that lawsuit is. We're a private university, and so it's probably not the same kinds of grounds that we're going to be talking about now with respect to the government. But we were just made aware of that lawsuit a couple of days ago, and we're not going to be talking about that one either.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I'm not sure what the legal basis for that suit is, but we're not going to address it here. That is the St. John's lawsuit. Okay, so what are we going to address? Well, our roadmap for this episode is the following. First, we're going to give a summary of the New York litigation against the vaccine mandate, the litigation involving religious exemptions, and the state of play now. Then we're going to give some more general background on vaccine requirements and religious objections. And finally, we're going to focus on an interesting issue raised by Governor Hochul's recent comments that organized religion has denied that religious exemptions to vaccines exist. So therefore, there shouldn't be any exemptions as a constitutional matter, as a legal matter. Now, Governor Hochul is wrong as a matter of current law, but both of us have written about this issue she's raised, which is, well, what counts as a quote unquote religious exemption for these purposes? And I should say, Mark, I sometimes think on these episodes, we're acting as color commentators for politicians, you know, sort of the way in sports, someone will say, well, you know, Belichick really shouldn't have called that play. That's kind of here. This is another example. Really, Governor Hochul, I think, has made a pretty big strategic error in making these comments. And we'll talk about what she's done.
That's right. But first, do a little play-by-play, Mark.
We'll do a little play-by-play.
The action on the field first.
Right. We'll do a little play-by-play first. So with regard to this New York State COVID vaccine mandate, this took effect at the end of last month. It covers about 650,000 hospital and nursing home workers. They're all supposed to be vaccinated against COVID or they won't be allowed to work. The mandate allows for medical exemptions. For example, workers who are allergic to vaccine components don't have to get the vaccine, but there is no religious exemption allowed under the mandate. Now it's interesting. An earlier version of the mandate did allow for religious exemptions for healthcare workers who didn't want to get the vaccine.
Yeah, that might be a problem, Mark, right? I mean, we'll have to talk about that.
I think so. Now, why did the state originally grant exemptions for religious reasons and take it out? The state says that it removed the religious exemptions so that the mandate would conform to earlier vaccine mandates that do not provide religious exemptions for health workers, like for measles and things like that. The plaintiffs, however, say that the state's action to allow a religious exemption and then remove it shows hostility to religion. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So some plaintiffs, representing maybe thousands of workers, have challenged the mandate on constitutional grounds. Mostly these are Christians who claim that from religious conviction, they cannot receive a vaccine derived from tissue that derives from aborted fetuses. And they claim that forcing them to receive a vaccine that is derived from aborted fetuses or lose their job would violate their free exercise rights.
Right. And you know, we should say here, I guess, a couple of additional things. Number one, most organized Christian communions have encouraged believers to take the vaccine, including the Roman Catholic Church, which, you know, earlier during the pandemic, and I think Pope Francis has been pretty plain about this over and over, they have issued statements that Catholics could in good conscience receive these vaccines. Receiving the vaccines wouldn't amount to, in their view, a formal cooperation with abortion. There's also, I think, a controversy about whether it's really true that the vaccines are in fact derived from, lines, you know, sort of compromised lines with respect to fetuses and so on. There's dispute about that. Obviously, you know, these plaintiffs have their views about these matters. It's a view that differs from the official position of their churches and from other scientists and so on, members of the community that dispute their positions.
Yeah, and Mark, we should note that New York's governor, Kathy Hochul, actually referenced the fact that organized religions have said there is no objection to vaccines in defending the absence of religious exemptions in the state mandate. So in a press conference, she said, I'm quoting, "There are not legitimate religious exemptions because the leaders of all the organized religions have said there's no legitimate reason." And then she also said, "I'm not aware of a sanctioned religious exemption from any organized religion. In fact, they are, that is, organized religions, are encouraging the opposite. Everybody from the Pope on down," she said, "is encouraging people to get vaccinated." And then there was a church service where she elaborated. She said, I'm quoting now, "God did answer our prayers. He made the smartest men and women, the scientists, the doctors, the researchers, he made them come up with a vaccine."
That's, by the way, extraordinary that she would say that.
Let me continue. Yeah. That is, well, extraordinary for a political leader to say
correct.
That. I'm sure there are many.
For the governor of a state to say that.
I'm sure there are many religious leaders and religious people who think that as well. Okay. And she continued, the vaccine, that is from God to us. And we must say, thank you, God. Thank you. And she continued, she was addressing a mega church congregation. "Yes, I know you're vaccinated. You're the smart ones. But you know, there are people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. You know this. You know who they are." And she encouraged church members to be her, quote, apostles, unquote, and encourage people to get the vaccine. We're going to see plaintiffs argue that these statements, I'm laughing only because they are extraordinary for a government leader to say things that directly. So the plaintiffs argue that these statements express hostility towards their religious views. And that's going to be an issue under strict scrutiny, as we'll see. Okay, there are a couple of cases. There's the case in the Northern District of New York federal court, in which the district court has temporarily enjoined the state from enforcing this mandate. The court's going to apparently issue a ruling in the next couple of weeks. And then there is also a case from the Eastern District, which made it up to the Second Circuit. And the Second Circuit has also enjoined enforcement of the mandate until it can hear argument. And argument in that case is scheduled for October 14.
Okay. All right. So that's a very good play-by-play of the sort of factual situation. Now let's talk, Mark, a little bit about the kind of legal background with respect to vaccine mandates, both with respect to the states, the government's power to issue them, and the issue of exemption. And by the way, we should say that this is, as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, recapping some of the discussion that we had 3 years ago with respect to the podcast that we had involving measles vaccination in 2019. But I think it's probably useful to replow that territory so that listeners are sort of on board with what's going on here. So the key case that everybody raises when it comes to vaccine mandates is the Jacobson case. The Jacobson case from 1905 out of Massachusetts. Of course, Jacobson was not about the free exercise clause. It technically was not a religious freedom case. It was about the due process clause. You know, we can talk a little bit about whether a free exercise case would be, if it had been brought as a free exercise case, it would have been different. If strict scrutiny would apply, the tiers of scrutiny really weren't in place in 1905. But at any rate, Jacobson was a case that rejected a due process challenge to Massachusetts's compulsory vaccination law. In that case, the vaccine at issue was for smallpox, very, very deadly disease. And the court said, well, states do have the power as part of their police powers, the power to care for the health, safety, and welfare of their citizens to enforce this kind of law. Now, just a quick note about this, but I think an important one, the court didn't say that states have the power to vaccinate people by force against their will. What Massachusetts had done by statute was to impose a fine and actually a comparatively modest fine for refusal to get vaccinated. So even in Jacobson, the enforcement mechanism really isn't compulsory vaccine, but it's monetary penalty. And then if for failure to pay the fine, which was $5 at the time, is probably just over $100, something like that today, that could result in jail time if you didn't pay the fine. But even then, you know, compulsory vaccination by force isn't really on the table.
Well, and it's not now, Mark, either. I mean, to be fair, New York State's mandate is these hospital workers must be vaccinated or they lose their jobs. They're not actually being forced to get the vaccine. They're not even being put in jail for contempt. They would just lose their jobs.
Right. Now, so one question about this is whether this kind of mechanism of losing your job without even having to go through the motions of paying a fine, whether that's really covered by Jacobson. Of course, there was a much more notorious case, Buck versus Bell, involving forced sterilization requirements, which was held also infamously by Justice Holmes at the time not to violate the due process clause. Perhaps the state wants to rely on that case. I suspect they'd much rather rely on Jacobson than Buck versus Bell. At any rate, that's the pre-religious exemption state of play in the early 20th century with respect to some of these vaccine mandate cases.
Yeah, and Mark, I just want to add that in some of these COVID cases that were up on emergency motions in the Supreme Court over the last year, the justices themselves have been debating what relevance Jacobson has for the current situation with COVID. Some of the justices think Jacobson is the seminal precedent, and others have kind of express skepticism whether Jacobson really covers the COVID religious exemption argument, because, as you say, Jacobson was—I mean, just in its turn on its face, Jacobson was not a free exercise claim. Jacobson was a substantive due process claim. Okay, now let's get back to our issue, which is religious exemptions, and of course, whether or not the state of New York has the power to enforce a vaccine mandate generally under Jacobson, or if that case is still good law, there is another question about whether, if it does have a vaccine mandate, it must also offer exemptions for people who say they don't want the vaccine because of their religious convictions. And as you said, as we've said, that's not covered by Jacobson, because the idea of religious exemption as a constitutional matter or as a statutory matter under statutes like RFRA or state analogs to RFRA post-date Jacobson by several decades. Now, in the actual case here in New York, New York has offered exemptions for medical reasons, although not for religious reasons. And the Supreme Court has been quite skeptical about situations like that. That is, once the state offers an exemption for some reason, then the court has been quite skeptical about the state's denial of an exemption for religious reasons. That is, and some people have called this the most favored nation idea. This comes from a scholar called Doug Laycock. It was actually adopted by Justice Kavanaugh in the COVID cases. And actually, the Supreme Court itself seems to have endorsed this most favored nation idea in one of the COVID cases. And the idea is that if you offer an exemption to someone, you have to offer that exemption. If you offer an exemption for some reasons, then you have to offer the exemption for religious reasons as well. That is, religion must be treated as well as the best category, as well as the category that gets an exemption. And now it's not clear that the Supreme Court's going to stick with that, but that is at least a suggestion in some of the cases. And here, if they've given an exemption for medical reasons, then under this theory, they probably also have to give an exemption for religious reasons as well. And Mark, you can talk a little bit about the Fulton case, which was decided at the very end of the last term, which kind of hints at this.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Even under Fulton, even a hypothetical, even the possibility of an exemption seems to trigger the necessity to give a similar exemption to religion. But we haven't even talked about the fact that New York had an exemption for religious reasons in these laws and decided to take them out. Now they say, well, we're just returning to the kind of status quo ante when, you know, before we granted the exemption, we didn't grant the exemption.
Right.
But I have the sense that after Fulton, this might be trouble for the state. So
I agree with you. I agree. I think it's very hard to have a medical exemption and not a religious exemption. And then even more so to have had a religious exemption and taken it out while retaining the medical exemption. I think it's trouble under Supreme Court precedent.
Right. Okay. So that's one thing. And then there are, of course, the governor's comments that you reported to us. And so just a few things to say about, about those. First, you know, her view about whether the state can use the words or the views of religious leaders like the Pope or other leaders as a legal basis for imposing a mandate, I think that betrays a serious misunderstanding of the state of constitutional law. You know, there's a well-known case, we've both written about this case, Thomas versus Review Board, that says the Free Exercise Clause and the freedom of religion protects even highly idiosyncratic beliefs that run directly contrary to the beliefs of the religious group that the plaintiff claims to be a part of. We've both written about this. We have, I think, compatible, although slightly different perspectives on this rule. So, but I think it's probably fair to say we both actually have some substantive sympathy for the governor's position on church leaders and established church doctrine setting the terms of religious belief. What, do you have any views about that, Mark?
Yeah, I'll just tell you my views, and you can say your views about this. So to me, this strikes me as just an essential problem with religious exemptions in a classical liberal state, which is kind of what this represents. I mean, so Thomas suggests that religion is an individual matter. And that, you know, it doesn't matter if organized religion says something, it matters what the individual conscience tells someone. And there's a problem, because if you really believe that religious exemptions are available on an entirely individuated basis, well, that becomes unworkable in a religiously pluralist society. On the other hand, if you say that religious exemptions are going to be limited to those that are recognized by quote unquote organized religions or established religions, established religions, or recognized religions, well, then you run into the problem of neutrality, because then the state is going to be picking favorites among religions based on something other than individual conscience. And so I see there's a real dilemma here for religious exemptions in the classical liberal state.
Yeah, well, so actually, those are I agree with everything that you just said. I mean, I have critiqued Thomas versus Review Board as an essentially empty understanding of religion. And in fact, some of the problems with our religion clause doctrine, free exercise clause doctrine, stem, in my view, from this hyper-individualized understanding of religion, which again, in my view, renders the legal concept of religion an empty concept and virtually unworkable. And so it only makes sense that that poor Governor Hochul has this view. It's a perfectly sensible view, in my understanding, about what religion ought to mean. Right, if you're part of a hierarchical or an institutional organization, you have to defer to the understandings of the leaders of that organization and the traditions of that organization and the system of belief of that organization. Otherwise, you're not part of that organization, much as you might think that you are. But of course, that isn't our understanding of religion. And as a result, you get into problems like the very problems that Governor Hochul seems to be getting herself into. They're sensible, right. They're sensible mistakes, but they're still mistakes under the law.
No, and look, so I would say that the view you're describing, which sounds to me like a coherent view, it is not the classical liberal view. And so what's going on here may be another example of how you know, I don't know what you want to call it, 21st century America, the growing pluralism is putting real pressure on classical liberalism. It comes from the left and it comes from the right, this pressure. And this is another example of that, I think.
So that's one kind of issue. The second issue that I just wanted to flag is that, you know, some of the statements that you read or that you reported that she made in church or otherwise, I mean, they sound like borderline violations of the Establishment Clause. She's talking about God answering our prayers and, you know, God wanting people to take the vaccine and, you know, you are all my apostles and get out there. So, I mean, if she's speaking officially in her official capacity as governor, right, God saving the smart people and condemning the stupid people who refuse to take the vaccine, I mean, that's a real problem. I would think that those statements are highly suspect in light of the court's anti-entanglement rules when it comes to the Establishment Clause. So, I mean, if I were the plaintiffs, I would raise those as independently problematic.
Well, yes, for a couple of reasons. One is what you're saying. Now, I do think she would probably answer, okay, well, I'm just speaking for myself here. I'm not speaking as the governor. But it's interesting how these things flip, because it's usually conservative politicians who say things like this and then fall back on, I'm just expressing myself. And it's usually people on the left of the spectrum who criticize conservative politicians who talk like this, like when George Bush said God told him to invade Iraq or whatever. You know, we hear a lot about the religious left. I guess this is the religious left, Governor Hochul, right? The left uses religion, the right uses religion. It's interesting to see the positions flip here. So that's one reason it's problematic. Second reason it's problematic is, of course, she really could be seen as expressing hostility to a particular religious viewpoint, which would be not neutral, which would get her in trouble even under Smith. That's a constitutional violation for the administrator to express hostility to a religious viewpoint. We saw that in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. So we were joking earlier about doing color commentary. Boy, she called the wrong play here. This was not a good litigation strategy, these statements.
Yeah, I particularly want to emphasize the, you know, the smart people get vaccinated and the dumb people don't, right? I mean, that sounds, as you say, that sounds like she's condemning the dumb people, right, on the basis of their religious views. So,
which would be a problem under Masterpiece Cake Shop,
absolutely,
right?
I mean, right. I think so.
So
that's true.
Okay, well, we'll see how this all plays out. We'll be watching these cases for you. As I say, there's going to be an argument at the Second Circuit on October 14, and there's this case in the Northern District that's proceeding too. I assume there will be some sort of an appeal to the Supreme Court at some point. I guess it would go to Justice Sotomayor. I guess she'd be the one to handle it on emergency appeal. So we'll see what happens here. Meanwhile, listeners, that's been another episode of Legal Spirits, our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on our website, lawandreligionforum.org, and also at Apple iTunes, also on the Android site. And as I say, we're working on getting this up on some other platforms as well. So hopefully we'll do that pretty soon. But that's all for now. Look forward to seeing you next time.